You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Grant Goldberg, joined as always by Spike Friedman. We are the normal suspects on this show. I'm of Forum Blue and Gold. I cover the Lakers on social media for this website. Spike's from The Stranger. He writes about the Seahawks, you know, all the time. He just wrote a great piece about Colin Kaepernick. But even bigger news, today we are joined by a very special guest. We are joined by Mina Kimes of ESPN. She's a senior writer at ESPN the magazine, a panelist on Around the Horn, a co-host of many different ESPN shows on TV and radio. The list goes on. She can add guest of the Locked On Seahawks podcast to an extensive resume. Mina, thank you for coming on.
Hey, guys. I'm always relieved to, like, mask off and just get some Hawks talk going because it's been about 3 or 4 years at ESPN, and I'm finally getting to the point where I no longer say we when talking about the team. So really proud of that and happy to undo that habit.
Great. Yes, this is a place where it is absolutely acceptable to consider yourself a member of the team, even if you might be judging their actions, which, based on the news in the last week, we might be doing. I think, just in general, we want to start today's episode talking the backup quarterback situation writ large. The Seahawks re-signed Austin Davis. They passed on an opportunity to bring Colin Kaepernick in. And they also, Grant, you said they re-signed someone, or they signed someone named Stephen Morris?
Yeah, Stephen Morris. He's a quarterback. He last played for the Indianapolis Colts, so he has that Schottenheimer connection. I don't see him being with the team next year, but yeah, they signed him for depth going into OTAs and training camp, obviously. But yeah, it's pretty uninspiring from my perspective.
Yeah, Mina, where do you fall on all of the backup situation in Seattle? Do you see them having their backup for next year on the roster now? What do you think about the Kaepernick situation? Yeah, just the backup quarterback situation. Where are you?
Sure. I think it's plausible that they'll draft someone, you know, in a later round, probably. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick is the best player available.
Yeah.
Goes without saying, for any team right now, and would be uniquely well-suited to the Seahawks as well. I found the whole story, it was interesting because I think it broke after the Niners, around the same time that the Niners were dealing with the Reuben Foster situation, or not dealing with it is maybe a better way to put it. And so those two things kind of hit at once, and it was sort of hard to process them both. But also hard not to see them in conjunction, right? This team doing everything they can not to cut this player who was charged with something extremely egregious. I think we can all agree if he was a lesser talent, he would have been, you know, gone within seconds. And then this other player who has not done anything wrong and is extraordinarily talented, and teams seem to be going out of their way to find reasons not to take him. It's interesting to me that Seattle was in the spotlight, or I guess made the decision that they did because they were the only team to even get that far. So in some ways, at least they did that, right?
Yeah.
It's like kind of funny that they're getting the most hate or criticism in some areas, probably from both sides for this, because that, like, they took a look at him. But it's a weird one to me, guys, because it just seems like there was a miscommunication at some point. So I almost don't, because I guess what confused me about it from the jump was they were saying they asked him what his plan was or if he was going to stand or not. And I think it's clear that there was no certainty. And I actually, you know, I guess what confused me was I thought Colin Kaepernick said he wasn't going to continue. So that confused me. Everything about this seems weird. It seems like kind of an unnecessary cell phone for Seattle.
Yeah.
It seemed really weird because you said that he would stop, because I read the same thing too. And as long as he's, you know, brought it to attention and has everybody, you know, having a conversation about it, he's done his job as an activist. And so, you know, he said that he'd have no problem standing. But it seems so weird to me. It feels like there's more to, you know, be told about this situation. They had a meeting. They went as far to schedule one. and then they postponed it. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, a meeting of any sort, but, you know, I've always, from my perspective, but I've always kind of taken pride in, you know, Seattle being one of the more progressive NFL franchises, and, you know, it's good that they got as far as they have with the Kaepernick situation, like you mentioned, but, you know, it kind of makes you, you know, it puts it in perspective that they're still an NFL team. And, you know, yeah. they still have the views of a lot of other NFL teams. So, you know, whatever progressive actions they take, and they do take a lot of them, you know, you still, you know, have to remember, you know, the entity that they are.
Yeah, we've got, you know, there are 31 other teams that aren't even taking a look at him.
Right.
And so it's disappointing to land in this spot, especially when I don't think any of us are excited about Austin Davis round two. And I'm correct on that. So it's just like and the team hasn't drafted another quarterback since Wilson. So that backup spot or that developmental spot, there just hasn't been any action there, which puts them in a bad situation both on the field if Wilson gets hurt. It puts them, I mean, this is a little gross in a different way, but it puts them in a bad position potentially negotiating a contract with Wilson in a market where guaranteed contracts are now a reality for quarterbacks. I mean, as you said, Mina, the potential that they draft a quarterback this year is live, but it's also possible that six quarterbacks go off the board before they pick the first time. So, you know, getting the seventh or potentially ninth best quarterback in this draft probably isn't going to find a long-term answer at that spot. All this, though, is happening with Bennett and Sherman leaving the team, but also we're talking about the backup quarterback, and it's a lot of noise around the backup quarterback. I mean, I tweeted out this Kaepernick piece, and I don't, like, have a massive Twitter following, and immediately I had to, like, block a lot of my mentions because just talking about the backup quarterback situation for Seattle has become a toxic conversation, mm-hmm. which is just insane.
Yeah, no, I tweeted something about it, and I think what I tweeted was something about how, like, I don't think Paul Allen cares about the protests or kneeling. They just don't want to deal, which I think is true of a lot of these teams. It's not like they're all run by guys who have certain kinds of political leanings, shared political leanings, and hate it. I think many of the owners, many of the organizations, many of the front offices, they just don't want to deal, which you can criticize just as much, but I think certainly is the case in Seattle. And it is funny that we're talking about this because this is a team with a lot of holes on it, and quarterback is pretty well.
Yeah, we've got a top five player at the position. And yeah, and again, like, I don't want to deal just blogging about it. So I am sympathetic to potentially Pete Carroll having to stand up at a press conference every week and be forced to talk about his backup quarterback and not wanting to do that. Yeah. It makes sense. Let's move on from backup quarterback and talk about a even potentially less fun conversation, which is last year's first pick, second rounder for the team, Malik McDowell, who it is now heavily rumored will be cut by the team either in advance of a deadline in June or right after that, depending on how they want to work it with the cap. Do either of you have a specific take on the Malik McDowell situation, or how do you guys even feel about it?
Well, I guess...
Yeah. I'll let you go first.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess there's no personal take other than this is just horrible for everyone involved and poor kid. From a team building perspective, which again, there's no blame to be assigned to anyone involved in this, but from a effect on the organization, it is remarkable, I think, how much this has affected the team, their future, the way they're building, because they really needed that interior pass rush and obviously went out and paid for Sheldon Richardson. Didn't work out quite the way they wanted, and they gave up a lot for it. And I think it's set them back pretty heavily.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate, I'd say. You know, he's your top pick a couple years ago, and then, you know, he goes down with this ATV accident. And, you know, I see people labeling him as a bust, but I just think that's really unfair because, you know, he hasn't even gotten to step on the field, and, you know, that's out of his control. I think that, you know, since the jump from this injury, it was the case that he may never play again, and there's some head and eye trauma. And so, you know, from my perspective, I wanted to see him okay. I think he had that weird run-in with the law too, where it was kind of nasty. But you know, hopefully, you know things can start going his way, and he can just get better from a human perspective.
Yeah, and I'll just speaking of that bust thing, the idea that he's the biggest bust in Seahawks draft history is ludicrous. I think it comes from the fact he was the team's first pick last year, but he's still an early second rounder. I mean, like, that's crazy to compare him to Rick Meyer, who's the second overall quarterback who didn't have a real impact with the team, or even Aaron Curry, who you're talking about a top five pick. Like, yeah. To call him the biggest bust is crazy.
Yeah, I think Curry's like top five. Like, he's, you know, on an NFL-wide list for me. I mean, he is up there, maybe in Seahawks history.
Yeah. And we can't fault the Seahawks for drafting him. You know, coming into the draft, he was a really talented player, like top 20 talent. And then he fell to the Seahawks. They moved back like they always do, and he fell into their laps. But yeah, it's just a really unfortunate situation. And, you know, like I said, hopefully it gets better. But before we get to the rest of the show, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're with Grant Goldberg, Spike Freeman, and Mina Kimes of ESPN. And we left you talking about, you know, one of the Seahawks' more recent draft picks and Malik McDowell, how he's probably not going to play again. He's probably going to be released by the team, which opens up even more holes for the Seahawks. And the draft is rapidly approaching. And
8 days away. It's ooh. 8 days away as we record this. Maybe seven when we release this, depending on Grant's editing speed. Shout out to Grant Goldberg for editing every one of these podcasts. That's so soon, guys.
Oh, my gosh. We have the foremost Seahawks draft expert on the Locked On Seahawks podcast right now, being as, you know, Spike and I have not dove deep into our coverage. But Mina came on. She was ready to come. She told us she was ready to talk some draft. And so my first question is, Mina, you know, we talked about McDowell leaving a hole, but what positions do you think the Seahawks should be targeting in the first couple rounds of the draft?
Yeah, and that's assuming, I mean, I think the Seahawks will trade down.
God, I hope so.
If you're not expecting that, you should prepare for that. If you're not expecting that, you're not a real Seahawks fan because you haven't lived through the last few drafts. But areas of need, so there's a lot, we can talk about kind of, you know, prioritizing them. Obviously, it depends on where they pick and the talent that's available. On the defense, you know, the line, obviously, we were just talking about McDowell and the impact that's had, but also we're going to find out what happens with Cliff Averill, right?
Yeah.
They added Tom Johnson, which was a pick I really liked, and is going to bolster that, and then Deion Jordan sticking around. So, I actually think this is kind of a sneaky, nice defensive free agency period for them, especially with the defensive backs as well, who I like. But the line, I could see them adding a pass rushing linebacker, and then a cornerback opposite Griffin is something I could see them targeting. On the other side of the ball, obviously, depending on what happens with Cam, that could be another safety to go there too, although I think they'll probably start McDougal. On the other side of the ball, running back is something I think that they're very likely to target. And then, as always, offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is there anyone? Okay, so let's assume we're trading back into the late first, hypothetically, maybe to, like, I don't know, 30-ish, somewhere in that range. Is there anyone who you are excited about filling one of those holes potentially for the Seahawks from a prospect side?
Ooh, that's fun. So my mock, I had the Seahawks I had the Browns trading into that spot, thinking that they've got a lot of assets, but it really could have been any team. So some of the players I have going near the end of the draft that are the first round that I like, Will Hernandez, the guard out of UT El Paso. He's just like, and I don't know if I like this for Seahawks necessarily, because he's like a combine freak, just like pure raw clay. His arms are each the size of three of my bodies. But I like him. I actually, sticking along the line theme, I like Connor Williams, who a lot of people aren't necessarily mocking in the first round. He's a tackle out of Texas. Just very technically sound. He struggled a little bit last season, and I think it might have been because of an injury, so I think he could rebound a bit. So those are two fits. Dante Jackson, cornerback out of LSU. I was going to say, you know, he's not terribly Seahawky. He's 5'11", kind of slight, but who knows what Seahawky means anymore. You know, like a super, super fast guy. He's got just elite speed, short area as well. So I don't know. I like him. And then another offensive lineman. I have a lot of offensive linemen here in the end of my draft season is Billy Price, who I actually think I saw they had a visit with him. He's a guard out of Ohio State. Hurt his pec at the combine. I don't think it's going to be too serious, but just a very good athlete, you know, one of the, I think, more technically sound guards in the draft as well.
Yeah, if you're thinking filling a hole on that Seahawks offensive line, do you think that they look at a guard, or do you think they look at that right tackle position? How do you think that composition could shake out?
Right, because that it really all depends on what their plans are for Jermaine Ifedi, right? And so right now, left to right, we've got Dwayne Brown. Are we assuming Postage? Am I saying his name right? Ethan Postage.
I think it's a hard C at the end.
Is it a hard C?
That's how I've been saying it.
But on this podcast, it could be whatever your preference is.
Look, we are all living in Southern California, so we get to be a little more casual with it than the average Seahawks fan who has to get this right.
Ethan. So, and then
big Ethan.
We got Britt, obviously. I guess we might assume it's Fluker. Jesus Christ. And then Ifedi. And
that
then
right side is just scary.
It is. Yeah. So I think the question is, you know, would they like to move Ifedi back or keep him at right tackle? I think he's gonna start again. I would be surprised if not. And then Fant's obviously coming back, but you know, that's a bit of a schlep too. So I don't know. And they've been so flexible in the past with these guys. It'll be interesting to see if that changes. I've been trying to learn a little bit more about, you know, Mike Solari's approach, what kind of guys he looks for, what does it mean? And, you know, I think that's going to be a huge determining factor. Actually, the draft will probably tell us a lot about his approach to line construction.
Great point. It's a great point. On the pass rushing side, you mentioned pass rushing linebacker. Is there anybody who you've liked there? When we talked to Danny, we talked Marcus Davenport, who's more of a line guy. I feel like he's going to be – we're going to trade back and leapfrog where he gets picked. I just feel like that's going to happen. So is there any other, like, freak athlete pass rusher that you see potentially going to the Seahawks?
Yeah, he's one who I also earmarked for them if they don't trade back. There's like a few guys in that area. I mean, Isaiah Wynn was the possible guard in that area. I think he'll be gone by the end of the first round. But Davenport and then Harold Landry, who's sort of a tweener out of Boston College, super explosive, like incredible three-cone time, just seemed like another guy the Seahawks would like. But again, I don't see either of those guys falling to 30. So the question is, who's there?
Yeah.
It's so hard. I mean, there's like you can do some wishful thinking and, you know, like look at guys. And one of the benefits of this draft for the Seahawks is that there's this run on quarterbacks, which actually helps, right? Maybe not as much as the guys in the middle, but there could be a lot of decent cornerbacks as well. And the guys who are going to go before are Roquan, Tremaine Edmonds, Roquan Smith, sorry. That's where I'm in the draft. I'm on first name. Tremaine Edmonds, Leighton Vander Esch, who's not really a Seahawks guy. Rashawn Evans, who's more of an inside linebacker, so I don't see that going. And then you get to, you know, like a Darius Leonard out of South Carolina State is an interesting prospect to me. And then the guys we talked about before.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think happens on Twitter if the Seahawks take a running back somewhere in the 30 range? What, like, is everything going to be okay or no?
Yeah, Twitter is going to be over, as we know.
Yeah, that's the end, right?
That's the end. That's how it ends. Like, you know, we talk about, like, how does, like, Game of Thrones end? Like, Seahawks Twitter ends if they take a running back. Even with the second, if they acquire a second pick, I could see them losing it. I don't hate it as much as everyone. Like, and that'll obviously tell us a lot about what they think of the guys on their roster. But, and whether Chris Carson can come back and all that. They're, you know, I like so many of the mid-round running backs in this draft that I don't think they need to go there, personally. I could, you know, if they get more picks, especially if they trade down, which seems like the most likely scenario, I could see them waiting a little bit.
I think even if they take one with their second pick, you mentioned Game of Thrones, that'll be like if their wall comes down, the Seahawks Twitter wall, and then, but if they trade up to take a running back, then that would be just the entire ending, like, Seahawks
Saquon Barkley,
like,
somehow they're at 11, oh, God. Like, yeah, nightmare. I can't live that life. I don't hate the, if they trade back and they take someone late second, early third, like, I don't hate that. I also think that it's a little bit of a reactive space for them to take a guy in off of the success of Kareem Hunt last year. And, oh my God, I am blank guy. Jesus. Yeah, of course.
Well, and that's, like, what kind of running back are we looking at? Like, because, you know, Kamara, like, you see guys like Sony Michel, the more smaller pass-catching type guys rising up boards in a very reactive fashion that you're describing. I don't see the Seahawks going after a guy like that. Ostensibly, we already have him with CJ Broussard. Who knows? But, you know, to me, they're going to go for a more traditional between-the-tackles type running back.
Yeah, great.
We saw CJ Broussard kind of usher in that type of player against the Patriots a couple years ago, but we really haven't seen that since. But, you know, like you said, I don't know if the Seahawks really take one early because they have so many guys in that room. They have Chris Carson coming back from injury, CJ Procise coming back from his perpetual state of injury, and then you re-sign a guy like, you re-sign both J.D. McKissic and Mike Davis, so you already have, you know, a good amount
of
players.
Actually, so... Another one of those sneaky off-season signings that I kind of liked.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, like, you lay out those four guys. Those were, if healthy, the four best players at that position the Seahawks had last year, and they're all dirt cheap still. So, they need one more guy to fill out their room. He needs to be a between-the-tackles guy, ideally. Someone who could pile up carries without being incredibly fragile and small. But, yeah, that guy hopefully is there in the third or fourth round with the Seahawks, ideally third or fourth pick at that point, rather than someone they reach on. I think that's good for Seahawks draft talk. We're going to take a quick break and come back because Mina Kimes is not just a Seahawks fan, but also an NFL writer at large, and talk about some of these quarterbacks and the guys at the top of the draft. So we will be back in 1 second on the Locked On Seahawks podcast.
Welcome back to the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We are still joined by Mina Kimes, and I don't know if everybody else did, but I saw the Etch-A-Sketch top five from your mock draft, Mina. And why don't you go ahead and we're going to talk about quarterbacks. So which one of the, you know, big-name quarterbacks in this draft do you like most?
So... I'm going to totally cop out and say there's no one I like most, like, in a vacuum.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Like, I like them for different purposes, for different teams, and for different needs. My mock draft, I had Sam Darnold pegged as number one. I think it's funny, last night, by the way, I fell asleep watching Sam Darnold highlights. Had some weird dreams. Weird dreams. A lot of
Yeah, like, what does that inspire? Like, you're just baking turnovers.
Yeah, he's really good. You know, it's like, I feel like it's hard with him because he did obviously regress a lot in 2016. You know, being a Huskies fan, I watched a lot of him. I watched Pac-12 than any sane human, and he absolutely blew me away, as with most people, I think. And then last season took a big step back, and it was kind of, I was trying to figure out why. That offensive line is a part of the reason why, but he was, you know, overly aggressive and made some mistakes, but he still showed the same tools that are so enticing. He's a great athlete. He throws on the run. With his weird arm motion, throwing motion, I can't really describe it. It just works no matter where he is. He throws with like a lot of anticipation, great vision. I just think Cleveland, and this is why I gave them to him, you know, not needing a guy to start at jump with Tyrod Taylor, it seems like go for the guy who has the highest ceiling, and to me, that's Darnold.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there do you have any comps for him in terms of guys in the NFL right now?
That's an interesting one. I got to think of some comps if I'm going to try to be a draft expert.
Yeah, well, the one I keep thinking of, and it's because the turnovers and the upside is Jameis Winston. But I don't know if that's quite it. I haven't watched enough Darnold tape.
He, at his best, he throws with a lot more touch and anticipation to me than Jameis. And yeah, I guess the he's got the same size and physicality, but the boneheaded turnovers, they're a little bit different from Jameis, where they're not as like, what was he thinking? And they're, you can kind of see them coming a little bit more. He'll get baited and stuff. It's all stuff that he can be taught not to do, although Jameis is still struggling with that several years later.
Yeah, the other obvious comparison that's been sticking in my brain with Darnold is his fellow Trojan, Carson Palmer.
Yes.
But that's from like 17 years ago. So I'm not. And also, we saw Palmer work under a couple different offenses. He went the opposite direction of Darnold over the trajectory of his college career. They also kind of look alike, so I don't know.
It's the hair.
All white blonde USC alums look the same to me.
It's so hard not to choose someone who looks like them.
Yeah. So moving down the board, who else are you excited about right now in terms of those quarterbacks?
Well, so a comp that I, having watched a lot of tape on this guy, I feel very comfortable making is Baker Mayfield reminds me so much of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And like it's not just the stereotypical short can scramble and stuff, but it's the way in which he keeps plays alive, the way he keeps his eyes down the field, and he takes good care of the football. And it's funny because like I feel like with Baker Mayfield, people talk about him like he's not the gunslinger in this draft. You know, he doesn't turn it over that much. He's pretty clever and careful. He operated an extremely different offense from Wilson in college, and that's. That the offense he did operate is one of the reasons people doubt him. But to me, that's the offense we're going to be seeing more and more of in the NFL. He's already shown that he can do it. I just don't understand why a team wouldn't, in the top five, wouldn't want the guy who can already operate that offense to the best of his ability.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah,
I think maybe the gunslinger persona that like people like peg him as, even though, like you said, that's not the reason that he really plays like on the field, but on the sideline, how fired up he is and how, for lack of better terms, how much of a rah-rah guy he is. And
yeah. And
I think just the passion that he has in the game and, out of the game, it kind of puts that image in people's minds. But, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think that they had a podcast, him and Russell Wilson, that I still have to listen to, but
it's a TV show. It's on ESPN. I should advertise it. It's called like QB to QB.
Right.
I haven't seen it yet, but people have sent me screenshots of them watching the final play in the Patriots Super Bowl. That's how
No.
Thanks, Twitter.
None of us can watch it now.
Yeah. No.
Well, just on Mayfield, I feel like it still weirds me out that he just showed up at Oklahoma after being at Texas Tech, and then he just, like, drove to Oklahoma and was like, yeah, I'm your quarterback now. I think that's still the most insane thing I've ever heard of in, like, high-level college football.
Isn't
and also,
the most, like, short guy story, though? You're like, yeah.
Yeah. So, and the other thing with him, the comparison to Wilson, is just ludicrous accuracy. And in terms of things that can be taught in the NFL, yeah, turnover prevention is one of them. Footwork is one of them. Accuracy, like we've seen, it isn't really something that improves a ton when you get to the higher level and are dealing with faster athletes. So if you're starting from Mayfield, who was, what, he had 76% or something this year? It was insane. And so, I think that it's a similar insane sort of stat line to what Wilson put up. Wilson slid because he's that extra 2 inches shorter, and he didn't exist yet to sort of make people confident. I think you're right. I don't think Mayfield will slide out of the top five.
It's going to be a run on quarterbacks. Very exciting.
Yeah. Do you want to talk one you like or one you don't like in terms of the remaining three?
Well, I think, you know, we can talk about, you know, Rosen is, I don't know, there's not a whole bunch to say. You know, he's the most traditional by far, and, you know, he's the traditional pocket passer. My only concern with him is not my only, but my biggest one is just the injuries. And, you know, I think Allen and Jackson, it's very interesting to me how much they've become written about and thought about in conjunction with each other, perhaps unfairly. I think that, though, what they do have in common is that they have the most highest variance, right? The highest kind of risk reward baked into them. One of them is still being pegged a lot higher than the other for a number of reasons that are complicated. Jackson is a guy I've watched a lot because I have a piece about him coming out. If this is Thursday, it's today. And he is completely fascinating prospect. My main takeaway from watching a lot of his game at tape and sort of the point of my piece is that his success is going to depend very greatly on where he lands in the NFL.
Is there a spot that you think would be really good for him?
It's funny because the teams that I think that are most interested in him are the good teams. You probably heard that, right? I was at his pro day and like half of the Steelers front office was there. Mike Tomlin was like on the field with him. The GM was there too. And then the Saints really like him. The Chargers were there. The Patriots have been linked to him. So there are a lot of teams that are looking for a successor who doesn't have to start immediately, right? But what's so interesting about those teams is, you know, they don't have dual threat quarterbacks. And what I think that shows you is this increasing awareness around the NFL or willingness to build around a dual threat quarterback. And that's sort of another point of my piece, which is like, you know, there is something happening right now in football, and it could be very good for Lamar Jackson if he lands in the right place, if he doesn't get Marcus Mariota'd and end up with, you know, having to run a traditional sort of old school offense for 2 years, then I think he could really thrive.
Yeah, if Lamar Jackson is an exotic smash mouthing, that'd be terrible. But when you said Steelers, that rung in my ear. Just thinking about how Roethlisberger evolved from being a bit of a dual threat when he first came into the league into what he is now, which is and I'm just like, oh, and the fact that he keeps threatening to retire every year, like that is a really good landing spot potentially. And just thinking back to the Cordell Stewart era, that they were sort of ahead of the curve, even if they were unwilling to fully commit to it in terms of using that dual threat quarterback. So I think that that's a exciting, as a Seahawks fan, horrifying potential landing spot for Jackson. But that makes me really excited.
That's exciting, yeah. I think one interesting thing about dual threat quarterbacks too is, like, looking back through the history of them is they change their game as time goes by. So like you look at Randall Cunningham or Mike Vick even, and you see the passing side of their game does evolve. But you look at a player like Deshaun Watson and what he did and how much he thrived, and that was because he ended up with a coach who was willing to build around him. As I'm sure Andy Reid will with Pat Mahomes next year. So I tend to feel like coaching and fit is undervalued when we talk about these quarterbacks, but especially with him, it's just so integral to his success in the NFL.
Yeah, I think building around these players is, you know, we talked about how it's the right way to go. You see, I mean, this is in the NBA, but you see, and I'm not comparing Lamar Jackson to LeBron James, but, you know, you put LeBron James on the floor with four shooters, and that's how the team has success. And if you put, you know, Lamar Jackson, a team around him that, you know, has speed and that can block and, you know, gets open downfield and can improvise in his plays, you know, you're going to have success and you're going to have, you know, a Deshaun Watson type impact. Well, I mean, maybe not to the, you know, to the scale of which he impacted the game, but, you know, he's going to, you know, have a pretty profound impact wherever he goes. Like, I was thinking, you mentioned the Saints, and I was picturing him on the field with Kamara and with Ingram, and, you you know, with a player like Mike Thomas who can, you know, go get a ball if he puts it up in the air. And that's, you know, a scary thought, you know, as an NFL fan, as a fan of an NFC team that, you know, hopefully will contend, you know, in the next, you know, year, 2 years. And so, yeah, I think that you really got to tailor to these skill players, and the quarterback is coming becoming even more of a skill player position with these dual threat quarterbacks.
Yeah, I hope that we're going to see more of it. Talking to some folks, some scouts around the league about it, they seem to think so, that there's, you know, like this new willingness. I mean, obviously the Eagles are the other example of a team that did sort of things on offense that really looked at college football. Titans, who I mentioned earlier, you know, they fired their head coach, replaced him with Mike Vrabel, and I imagine Titans fans were quite heartened when out the gate he said, I'm going to, like, I think he, the quote that got a lot of attention was he said, college football is our farm system, which was like one of those like, ooh, like too real things, right? But he meant it, or he was talking about it in a football sense, which he was like, yeah, we're going to use college principles. We're going to use RPOs and bootlegs and sweeps. And it's like, you have one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. Maybe do the things that made him great. Crazy idea.
Yeah. Well, and let's bring the pod full circle before we end it. Where, how crazy? I saw that there was one mock. I think it was field goals. Was looking at the possibility of the Seahawks drafting Lamar Jackson. How crazy does that seem to you in terms of a backup secondary passer role? And if not Lamar Jackson, is there anybody a little further down the board quarterback wise who can be that sort of dual threat potential, and it's weird to say successor, but potential backup, potential Jimmy Garoppolo-esque trade piece for the Seahawks in this year's draft?
I think it would be crazy for the Seahawks to do that. I mean, it would be great to have him, great, perfect fit, you know, incredible, whatever, but
we don't have the access. Yeah,
a tremendous waste of draft capital, especially, you know, part of who, the, if they do draft a quarterback, again, as we talked about in the beginning, it would be not only with it's not about finding your quarterback of the future. It's about finding a backup who can reasonably start if Russell Wilson gets hurt, and also an asset that you can develop and then let go for comp picks or trade. So yeah. That would be the team's goal. You can't really increase the value of first round draft pick much. So it doesn't really make sense. As far as the later round guys, I actually have not been looking at any dual threat guys in the later round. Something I might want to do. I've heard good things about Kyle Lauetta and Logan Whiteside, though. But as far as who the Seahawks might look at, I'm sure it's just someone that's going to make us all very angry.
Perfect. Yes. Ideally, it's another Schottenheimer. There's some secret Schottenheimer out there. keep it in the family at the backup quarter position. Is there anything else, Grant, that we got for today?
I think 100%. That covers it. I don't think we mentioned the Dante Johnson signing from last week on last week's show, but he started all 16 games for the Niners.
Are you excited about that?
No, I don't care.
let's do it. You have a Dante Johnson take. Oh, my God. Please.
No, I talked to a Niners fan. He said he got beat a lot, but he was healthy. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, Carroll can work some magic. But from this standpoint, it's a pretty uninspiring signing, like an Austin Davis type.
I just like that we did, like, we, boom, I got in a wee. Wow.
What the? There it is.
There you go.
I just like that the team didn't overspend on anyone. I don't look at a single one of the contracts they gave on the offseason, and there's not a Luke Jokel in sight.
Nope, the DJ Fluker deal is fine.
Yes, they're all fine, you know, and great. Good for them. They got a ton of value. Hopefully some of them work out, but there's nothing, there's no Eddie Lacy's, there's no Jokels, there's nothing just that upsets me.
Yeah.
Just don't look at me.
On that particularly optimistic note for Seahawks fans in the midst of a club in crisis style offseason, Mina, thank you so much for being on. Do you have anything in particular you want to hype out on this potentially Thursday morning release of the podcast?
Just next week we're doing a Twitter Live draft show at ESPN, so check it out on Twitter.
Awesome. And I assume any listeners out there do follow Mina, but if you don't, @MinaKimes on Twitter is one of the essential Twitter follows in all of sports. Grant, you got anything to promote before we end it?
Besides this podcast? Nope.
Please listen to this podcast. People who've made it 43 minutes in, please keep listening.
We're talking to you, Fatty Acid 23. Fatty Acid 23 left a negative review about taking breaks in podcasts. But we want you to go on to iTunes and leave these kind of reviews. You know, let us know how you like the podcast or what you dislike about it. But preferably put a 5-star review in there and help us succeed. Besides that, I don't think we have any ads. So we want to thank you again, Mina, for coming on. So for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman also signing off.